Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
All right, David, walk us through. What do you mean someone wasn't there to press the reset button? What are you talking about?
All right. Well, here's the thing. The thing is that we, NASA does things in sort of milestones and steps, you know, and that's just kind of like the way NASA does stuff. So we had the helicopter and we dropped it on the ground and everything was okay. Check. We let it sit overnight because we wanted to make sure that it could survive the nighttime temperatures on its own. And so we charged up the batteries, let it sit overnight, and it was able in the morning to function normally. So we were like really excited because it was able to survive 130 degree below zero temperatures. So check. We let it do this a couple of nights, recharging its batteries with its solar power and solar panel and everything. And then came the day, the big day, when we were going to just rev up those motors, rev up the rotor blades to 2,400 RPM to see if it was ready to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got that command out, and something happened where the software just wouldn't go to flight mode. The software got stuck. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you. You may be working with a computer, and then you get the little blue beach ball of death.
It's the spinning wheel of death. This color spinning wheel of death. I hate it on the Max. Oh my Lord.
Yes.
Oh no.
Spinning wheel of death, and it just was stuck there.
No.
I know. Yeah. So now the thing is that now we're NASA. We can handle this.
We're NASA.
So we can do this. So what happens is that we install on these systems what's called a watchdog timer. Now I'm like, oh, what is this? What's a watchdog timer? Well, if you wanted to reset a computer back on Earth, we just hit the reset button,
mm-hmm.
or we turn the computer off and then we turn it back on again. That's what humans do here on Earth. But if your human is back on Earth and the computer is on Mars, how do you hit a reset button? And so computer engineers have come up with this little solution, and it's really kind of clever. There's this little thing called a watchdog. It can be a chip or it can be a piece of computer programming, and all it does is run a little timer. You know, you set the timer to maybe, let's say, 10 seconds, and it's going to count down from 10 seconds. Just before it hits zero, the computer program kicks it back to 10 seconds. And as the computer program is running normally, it periodically goes back to that watchdog and kicks it. It kicks the watchdog and resets the timer. Kicks the watchdog and resets the timer. But when you get the blue ball of death and the computer program doesn't run, there's nobody in the computer that's going to kick the timer. It's not going to kick the watchdog.
I just feel like with how smart NASA is and everything we come up with, like, why is this something we're dealing with? Like, why is this our issue? We're on Mars, for crying out loud. Like, what?
Thank
why is this
God
the problem?
We have this watchdog timer. Because watchdog timer does, it's got one job. And it's got to do this right. It's got one job. And its only job is that when my timer runs out, I hit the reset button. And that's what it did. And so it was able to reboot and reset the computer. And that's when NASA was alerted to, oh, my gosh, something's in our software that's not letting us get these rotor blades to rev up to 2,400 RPM, which is what we need to fly. And so what that means is that, well, NASA's got to – they've got to update the software. And so they're
– All right. Wait, David. Hold on.
2.0, and we
okay.
have to get that.
So hold on. Back up really quick. So first of all, real quick, in a quick synopsis, remind people if they didn't know, what was the initial, like, mission here? What were we trying to accomplish?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, sure. So this is the first time that we have deployed a small helicopter on the surface of Mars. It weighs about 4 pounds here on Earth. In the Martian gravity, it'll weigh about 1.5 pounds. It has 4-foot-long blades and has a back up two of them, counter-rotating, and it is going to, if we can do this, it is going to be the first demonstration of powered, controlled flight on another planet. Now, I've set it up, and now our computer crashed. But that's okay.
Okay, so now that the computer crashed, because I remember last week when I said to you, hey, I don't want to be like the bearer of bad news here, but if this doesn't work, what happens? And you're like, well, that's so I'm curious, like, are we able to run another test, or is that like that's it for the helicopter?
No. So here's what we're going to have to do. So we're going to have to update the software. With some minor changes, we're going to update the way that the computers boot up. And then what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to test it on computers here on Earth just to make sure everything looks okay. Because we've got our own little, sort of like a simulator, a helicopter simulator here on Earth just to test things to make sure everything's good. And once we're confident that this software package is going to work, this little update, then we got to send it to Mars. So we have to transmit it all the way across space to Mars. Then it's got to get picked up by the rover Perseverance, the big car-sized rover that's on Mars. Then it's going to take that software, and then it's going to beam it right to Ingenuity. And Ingenuity is then going to just wait for the software to update. And then when the update is complete, it's going to reboot with the new software.
Okay, so how long are we waiting for this software update?
We've got probably today. So we're hoping that probably today, maybe into tomorrow, we'll have an idea if the software works.
Okay.
And then the big step is, okay, now that we've got the new software, we're going to tell Ingenuity, our little helicopter, rev up your rotor blades. And if you can get it to 2,400, we're not going to fly yet. We're just going to really rev it up. Then Ingenuity will let us know, great, I can now go to flight mode. Once we're in flight mode, after that, we're going to fly. And that's going to be a nail biter because all of this is done autonomously.
Right.
It's designed to fly by itself. So its first little hop is probably going to be no more than about 10 feet high and then come back down again. And
well, because if it crashes, that's it. We're done.
We're done, yeah.
Like, we're done, yeah. So you can't go too far there, Ingenuity.
No,
like, just
no,
baby
no,
steps,
no,
bud.
No, no. Baby
my God,
steps,
we're not going down steps yet, all right? We're just taking our first step. Relax.
The Wright brothers would go nuts. They're like, do this right. This is important.
Oh, my gosh. This is stressful. David, how do you go to work every day and not just stress out? Like, I know you're here on Earth, but like, if I were watching this every day, I'd be like, dang, I don't know, man. Oh, my gosh. NASA, forget it.
Chai latte I was drinking, and I wouldn't be able to get through this day. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, so,
oh, my gosh.
But this is the exciting part about doing something new.
Yes.
You know, we've never done anything like a flight on Mars.
Yeah.
But if we can pull this off, this is even now, this is a real learning experience for us.
I mean, what does that movie say? If you build it or if you dream it, you can build it. I mean, right? Isn't that what's happening right now? We're kind of like, if you dream it, you can fly it, I guess.
It will come, you know?
Yeah, there you go. You know. If you build it, they will come. There you go. You got it.
The humans will come. Just don't mess it up right now.
Yeah, just please don't mess up. Good God, we're all praying here on Earth. All right, David.
We'll get there. So we're hoping that once we've got the patch, software is updated, and we'll do that first maneuver. We're going to be excited. But we probably only have enough battery power to do one 90-second flight a day. Because we need to charge the batteries to keep us warm during the night. And so
Oh my gosh, David.
And we got to make sure that we fly at the right time.
Right.
Because if we wait too late in the day, we won't get enough sunlight to be able to charge our batteries.
This is very dramatic. Let me just say, this is incredibly dramatic.
And we can't do it. We can't do it in the morning because weather conditions and all that. We can't fly at night. And so, there's like a window in which we've got a shot to fly. And
get
through that first step. Let's get those rotors revved up.
Okay. Well, David, let's keep our fingers crossed. And for the record, I think Ingenuity, as cute as a helicopter it is quite high maintenance. So we will see what happens. And we're just keeping our fingers crossed for the little guy. Hopefully it goes well up in Mars. Thank you so much.
Definitely let you know. What
please.
All right.
Yes, please do. We're all voting for it. Go Ingenuity.
Yeah, thank you.
guy for watchdogs.
Yeah, seriously. Amen to that. All right, David. Thank you so much. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care.
Good Lord. I am stressed out. Like, I need to just take a chill pill right now. My heart is, like, pounding out of my chest. Good Lord. I know a lot of you are going to want to hear this story. I certainly do. So I'm texting First Selectman Jim Marpy to talk about some of the topics in Westport, what we want to talk about. And, you know, right at the end of the conversation, Jim goes, oh, by the way, I met Prince Philip. What? What do you mean? Like, what? What do you mean? I need that story. And he's like, I'll tell you tomorrow. So we're here, Jim. I want the story. What do you mean you hung out with Prince Philip? I want to know.
We'll try to condense it into as brief a story as possible here. But, you know, I mean, sadly, the prince passed away last week, and I think I'm sure all your listeners are aware of that. You can't escape that piece of news. But that it felt like when those little memory boxes pop up on your Facebook page mentally. But this goes back 25 years to 1996 when I was still in the private sector. I was a partner with Accenture, which is a global management and technology consulting firm. And Prince Philip was on a private visit to New York. You know, not all the things he does or any of the royal family does, I've come to realize, are these public pomp and circumstance events. He was literally on a private visit for various reasons, but one of them was his my British partners in Accenture asked if I would introduce the prince to the leadership team of one of the major New York global banks, who happened to be my client at the time, and to try and encourage that bank's further expansion into the UK. So in effect, he was making a marketing call.
Oh, really?
So he showed up at our offices. We were those of us who are not used to dealing with royalty were appropriately briefed by someone who represented his entourage. Had a sense of what the protocol would be, but I was pleasantly surprised. He had a very relaxed demeanor. There was a genuine engagement in the presentations and the discussion, and he had kind of a self-deprecating sense of humor, which you might not have expected by someone in his position. One of the things I remember, though, most clearly, before we got to the meeting itself or to the meeting process, there was a little reception line, and as he came through and we didn't shake hands. It was this sort of royal thing that I touched his hand, but it was not a firm hand grasp that we're used to. But he focused on me for the minute in that reception line that he was talking to me. He was paying no attention, you could tell, to what was going on around him and other people in the room. We were like eye to eye, and he asked some questions, and I hope I answered them to his satisfaction. But when he was done, and he kind of had this inner time clock, it was time to move to the next person, he was done.
Wow.
And then he focused on the next person. And later in life, in the job I do now, that I still recall those lessons of when you're doing a reception line, when somebody's in front of you, you focus on them, and you shouldn't be looking around or seeing who else is in the room, and that was a great takeaway. But this was 20 years before Netflix gave us the Crown, and this was the year before Princess Diana's untimely death. So we didn't know so much about the royal family at the time, but my British friends, knowing I was going to be in this meeting, briefed me with some of the challenges that the family has, and I was aware of the prince's propensity for making some tone-deaf remarks and maybe some other things in his life, but the business meeting went on for a couple of hours. There were maybe a dozen of us, and it felt very comfortable. He was in a business suit. There was none of the medals and fancy uniforms or anything like that, so
wow.
it was a unique business experience in my life, but it was also just kind of a unique experience to meet someone of this
like that caliber
now.
Yeah.
And I took away some lessons that in some, not that I don't think of myself as royalty in the job of first selectman, believe me, but just, you know, how to deal in a situation where you don't know who these people are.
Yeah.
Sometimes or whatever, but, you know, how to focus on what their interests are and why they're there. So it was one of those great memorable experiences. I have the pictures to prove it.
I believe you. I believe it's a very detailed story, so I believe you.
I had a lot more hair then, and it was a very different color than it is now. But
that is so cool. Well, yeah, very cool, Jim.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I think that's neat.
May he rest in peace, and he did the job he was asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
Did it with a certain panache and style, and it is interesting to me how I reminded my partners that, you know, we fought a war with Great Britain back in the, you know, 1700s to
right.
Be independent of royalty and everything, but it's still interesting to me how fascinated.
Oh, people love
so
the royal family.
Americans are.
Oh my gosh! I mean, I would never say that we're as big a fans as the Brits, but yeah. My gosh, we're like up there. I'd say we're like number two. We like Americans love the royal family. It's unbelievable how engaged we are with them. Yeah, that's such a true statement. I love that. Jim Marpy is here, the first electman of Westport. Now, Jim, I unfortunately I am kind of running out of time, but I did want to give a quick update. It sounds like you guys have a new drive-through testing facility for COVID. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we in about an hour we have a Board of Selectmen meeting, and we will presumably be approving a testing facility that will be set up in one of the parking lots down by the Saugatuck train station, operated by Progressive Diagnostics, a firm out of Trumbull that has been doing our employee testing for us. And the reason we're hoping to get this set up by the weekend, we'll see if we can make that happen. I'm concerned that this is school vacation,
yes.
Spring recess,
mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned that a lot of people have been traveling, and while a lot of people have been vaccinated, and I know a lot of your show this morning has been devoted to vaccination, there's still a lot of people that aren't, and
yes.
I want to have the ability for people as they're coming back to get testing, if easy access to testing if we want. So hopefully my other select persons will agree to this, and hopefully they'll be able to set up for the weekend.
Okay,
but
so the
another thing we're likely to approve is one of those great Westport events that goes back decades and decades, the Women's Club Yankee Doodle Fair. Normally a June event, just a small, you know, a small carnival in town, but it's a real, particularly for a young family, just kind of a great, great experience. So they're going to be asking us to do this, approve this from September 17th to 25th, normally a mid-June event, but hoping that by September people will feel comfortable going to an amusement park experience. And
mm-hmm.
This is a very important fundraiser for the Women's Club, who, you know, take that money and then turn it, give it to worthy causes throughout the town. So,
yeah.
So an important event. And I was thinking about sometimes for a lot of the kids, teenagers or, you know, middle school kids, this is their first opportunity where their parents feel comfortable letting them go to this by themselves.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Safe experience.
And, yeah.
I can remember that was sort of my daughter's first. She and her pals hung out there for a couple of hours,
cool.
And, you know, on their own.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Well, Jim, the only thing I'm going to ask you, I know I have to let you go, but will you please update me on what the decision is for the testing so I can let the audience know as soon as you know?
That.
Okay.
I will do that.
Cool.
We're trying to make sure we know the details. But,
perfect.
Thank you for that. I'll give you a text later.
Yeah, that sounds great. First Selectman Jim Marpy, I love talking to you every other week. Thank you so much, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Very good. Have a good day now.
Thanks, Jim. You too. Since the news broke on Tuesday about the J&J vaccine pause, many city leaders have had to readjust for their vaccination clinics that rely on the J&J. And That kind of goes for Milford as well. So this morning we've got Mayor Ben Blake, who is back on the show. How does the J&J pause impact Milford, Mayor Blake? I know you guys have a vaccination clinic we've talked about that's run by Yale that's been very successful in Milford. Does the J&J, is that used there?
Good morning, Melissa. It is used at the Yale Clinic. Our Milford Health Department also stands up a separate clinic on Wednesdays and Fridays, and both of those clinics get a lot of people coming through them to get vaccinated. Yale has had the Johnson & Johnson. Milford has had predominantly Moderna, but we have had Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson we have utilized for our homebound, mostly seniors who cannot get to a clinic because they are homebound. And we have had nurses actually go to their homes, and they've used the Johnson & Johnson for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. One, it only has five doses to a vial instead of 10. So if you're going to need to make sure you use up an entire vial, you don't want to have 10 different stops that you have to make. In addition, it travels better. And finally, it's a one-shot as opposed to having to do two inoculations.
Right. Right. So how are we making the adjustment in Milford? Because, I mean, I can understand. I know that the governor had said, anywhere where we use J&J for health clinics, Yale, for an example, obviously, they're just going to supplement Pfizer. We're expecting to get more Pfizer and Moderna next week to make up for the J&Js. But like, those homebound visits, for example, are we going to either keep those on standstill? Are we putting Modernas there? Like, do we have any idea what we're going to do for that?
So, again, this is all brand new news, but we have to coordinate. We have already started to coordinate that effort. There is a little bit more involved because you have to make sure that you get 10 different patients ready and available, and even the driving routes for the nurses and the paramedics who will be going to these seniors' houses. We have to make sure that those routes are a little tighter and make sure that they get there on time.
So really quick, Mayor Ben Blake, I didn't even realize that Milford specifically had this in place. I know that Griffin had said they had mobile units. I know that the governor just this week started rolling out. He calls them like mobile COVID vans, basically, but they're like ice cream trucks almost. I didn't realize like Milford specifically had this for especially homebound seniors. Is there a way, if we have listeners who fall under this category, the J&J kind of makes it a little bit complicated, and I know it's in the works, but at some point this will get worked out. Is there a way that specifically Milford residents, if they fall under that category, can have access to this program?
They can absolutely contact our Milford Health Department. Again, because of the complication with the J&J, we may have to seek some additional help from the State Department of Public Health and get some of those mobile units as well. We had been doing it through our nursing staff and our paramedic staff as of just recently, but we may have to switch things up, or we will have to switch things up a bit and may seek one of those mobile units as well.
Okay. Talking to Milford Mayor Ben Blake. Now, what about high school vaccinations? I know off the top of my head, you guys have two public schools in Milford. You've got Laurelton Hall there as well. So you got a lot of high school students who are in Milford. Are there any talks about making some kind of a vaccination clinic, especially because it's just Pfizer, that would be okay for the 16 and 17-year-olds? Any talks about setting something up for the high schoolers?
Yes. So we have foreign law. We have the Academy, and we have Platt Tech, as well as Laurelton. So we do have a lot of high schoolers in Milford, and a lot of them have already, or some of them have already been vaccinated or signed up for vaccines. Only Pfizer is permitted for 16, 17-year-olds at this point. That may change, but right now, 16, 17-year-old high school kids can only receive the Pfizer vaccination. And right now, Yale distributes the Pfizer vaccination because they have the freezer units. Our local health clinic does not. We can only handle, at this point, the Moderna because of the storage requirements. So we are working with Yale New Haven Health Systems, to stand up a a clinic. Again, things are still being worked out right now for our high school students. But, you know, as we do that, there are more and more of Milford's 16, 17, 18-year-olds that are scheduling appointments and that already have been and will be getting vaccinated through the normal course. But it has to be through Pfizer.
Mayor Blake, actually talking about education, this is kind of connected. I was reading, I think it was the Connecticut Post. Don't quote me on that. But I think I was reading this week in the Connecticut Post something about Stratford and Milford combined received $24 million from the government as part of the COVID relief package. But there was a significant difference in how much money was going to each. I mean, the Stratford Board of Ed was getting somewhere around $20 million of it. I could be wrong on the figures. Milford getting significantly less. Any idea why it was so drastically different between the two?
So there's, you know, formulas at the state and the federal level about how this is worked out. You know, I think that these formulas include things like grand lists and a whole bunch of different complicated factors. I don't know what goes into each of those factors because each different grant distribution has a different set of criteria. I know for the American Rescue Plan, you're right, where Milford's school system is receiving a little over $5 million. But in addition to that, the city's getting through the CDBG some additional money above and beyond that. We can't tell you exactly how we're going to use it because the Treasury Department has not worked out the guidance yet.
Okay, gotcha.
We will soon. So we don't know exactly what type of programs or projects we can be utilizing that money for as of yet. Hopefully we'll have some more information soon.
Okay, cool. Yeah, if you get the update on that, that would be awesome. We'd love to let our listeners know. I know we've got a lot of Milfordites there, including myself, so we'd love to hear an update on that. And then really quick, from the Milford and me, I've started going back to running down at Walnut Beach because it's gorgeous and more people going back down that way. I'm just curious. I'm sure you guys have been talking about it, but I know the governor is super amped on Memorial Day weekend. He thinks we're going to have more people vaccinated at that point. We're going to be closer to herd immunity. He says we could be getting back to parades and fireworks and things like that. He's hoping late spring, early summer. Now, Milford's one of the more popular areas in southern Connecticut where people literally will travel from out of state to come to our beaches and our state parks. Any plans in the works at this point that you could tell us about that are like a go, or are we still not sure yet?
So there's probably going to be some type of social distancing guidelines, but my great hope is that we are as close to normal as possible for the summer. There will be, you know, some health precautions and some requirements that we have to implement at all of our open spaces and our recreational areas and our beaches, but we are looking forward to a good sunny summer, and my hope is that it is back to as normal as possible with everybody getting vaccinated and reaching or getting closer at least to herd immunity.
Yeah, my hope is that too. I would love that. Right. Mayor Ben Blake, I always enjoy having you on the show. Thank you so much, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Listen in the Morning on WICC 600.
So, Dan Onofrio, it's interesting when you and I were chatting briefly yesterday about whether or not people should require their employees to get vaccinated for COVID before returning to the workplace. We actually got an email sent out to our entire staff yesterday saying that it was not going to be mandatory here at Connoisseur Media, but that they encourage it, which I think is the right approach. I think a lot of times when you force people to do things, they're more inclined to turn away from it. Whereas I'm finding a lot of people here, unless they've been medically told not to, a lot of people are itching at the opportunity to get their COVID vaccine. What are you sort of recommending to local businesses when it comes to either mandatory or just encouraging the vaccine for employees?
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. Yeah, for sure. I think the right approach is what Connoisseur did. You know, if we can, the businesses can encourage their employees to get the vaccination. You know, we have to remember that the FDA still has not officially approved the vaccine, right? It's still in trial. It's still under emergency use. So, you know, there's still a lot of things that need to be answered, questions that need to be answered related to the vaccine. But that said, you know, larger organizations, you know, they're able to do that. They have the staffing. They have the ability to, you know, have people make their own decisions, whether they can get the vaccine and then return back to the office or their workplace. But the smaller organizations are the ones that we're hearing that are struggling because, they want to bring their people back. They need to bring their people back as it relates to production and other things. You know, mm-hmm. and think about the small staff. I'm talking about like 10 people, you know. Mm-hmm. But if they're not it's safe to do so and have the vaccine, you know, it creates an uneasy work environment. So there's a lot of decisions that need to be discussed and made and how businesses approach it. But the right one, I think, of course, is, you know, let's encourage people. And from our perspective at the Business Council, let's continue to educate people, on the facts about the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So we're looking to put together a lot of these discussions in an informational session in the coming weeks. So I'd encourage people to keep an eye on our website for that. But we're going to bring the hospitals together, to medical professionals, a lot of businesses, small and large, on how they're approaching it, because it is a very big question right now on how employers address this with their employees.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's funny, but I thought I was so brilliant over the weekend. I came up with a campaign slogan that I feel like we should totally use, but it probably is being used. I just haven't heard about it yet. And it's get the facts and get the vax, or know the facts and get the vax, something like that. I was kind of toying with the idea.
Yeah.
But it's true, because I think that I agree with you. I think making things mandatory just scares people, or just makes them feel like on the defense, like, whoa, don't come at me and tell me what I have to do. So I think that approach is important. But I think encouraging, like you said, is not enough. I think it's so crucial that we are educating, especially, I've got to imagine, Dan and Offrio, that you guys are probably seeing it as well. Social media is wrecking everything right now when it comes to putting out fake headlines, putting worries into people's minds that simply have not either been proven or have been told about the COVID vaccines. Like even yesterday's news of J&J, immediately people want to, jump off the deep end kind of thing. And it's like, wait, hold on. Just give it a quick second and like, let's get the facts before, we think everything is doom and gloom. And I think it's important that we take the time to educate, or else we're not going to get people vaccinated.
Exactly. Exactly. It's interesting because, we're used to, think of our kids, we're used to having them, be vaccinated before we send them to school. It's a requirement. I think across most of the country, if not the entire country. So we're kind of used to it, but because now it's impacting us as adults, it's like, maybe we got to hit pause for a second. And you're right. The J&J news yesterday was a bit disappointing, but if you look at the facts, it's a very small percentage. And I think they're doing the right approach. Let's hit pause for a second. Let's just make sure that, we're checking everything out, making sure everything is okay. And it's the right thing to do. And, in the end, we just have to continue to educate ourselves, get involved in the dialogue and the conversation. And as you pointed out, you can't take what you see on social media as, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. People have their own interpretation. So let's just be smart about it and, work with our officials, within our employers' organizations, as well as the municipalities that we live and work in.
Now, Dan Onofrio is here of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And Dan, last week we talked about the big news out of the hornblower announcement with bringing these massive ships into Bridgeport. It's going to be very cool. It's going to bring dozens of jobs to Bridgeport. I was just curious, and I don't know if I'm causing some trouble here, so you could just say cut it out. But I was curious if you had any sort of updates, anything else that is either popping up in Bridgeport, any inside scoop, anything we can look forward to coming to Bridgeport. Port, anything else?
Yeah, so there's definitely, you can't expect another announcement related to the harbor over the next month or so, maybe sooner. That's in the works. I'm not at liberty to say all the details, but I think we could be excited about another announcement coming to the harbor area. And in addition to that, I'll be honest, I think I said this on another call we had. The phones are ringing. We've been working pretty closely with the city, and not just Bridgeport, but Stratford and Trumbull as well, where we represent, and Fairfield a bit with Mark Barnhart at the Economic Development Office there. The phones are ringing for the region, and it's a combination of people looking to relocate. I think because, again, of this wave, this exodus a little bit out of the New York market, and obviously Stanford's benefiting quite a bit from it, but it is trickling up north of Norwalk and into Bridgeport. But existing businesses looking to expand as well. I've been really pleasantly surprised to see businesses in Bridgeport that are looking to expand their footprint. Again, I can't necessarily disclose who they are, but it does translate into jobs. I think yesterday or the day before, there was an announcement of the Stratford Brewery, Atlantic Brewing Company, that is looking to expand their footprint in Stratford. You know, and that, you know, they're anticipating 200, 300 jobs. So if you take the Hornblower deal and you take the Athletic Brewing expanding, you know, these 100, 200, 300 jobs, it all adds up. And then right in downtown, Berlinetta Brewing Company is going to be opening up in June. That project's coming along really well. Golden Hill, that's been a transformation of that building on Golden Hill and Main, mm-hmm. North Main Street. And so we're excited about that as well. So you do see a lot of activity. It is a time, I think, that we can be excited. I think the Hornblower deal from last week really what got people talking again. And it's been an exciting week at our office just with people asking questions and saying, hey, what else is happening? Just like your question.
Yeah.
This morning. So, stuff's happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't wait to dig into more, and I will be patient, but, you know, glad that I got a little snippet. That's exciting. I'm very excited about that, Dan D'Onofrio. Thank you.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Like I said, when we can see businesses bringing jobs, you know, and again, if it's 10, 20, 100, you know, it's all good. We need to get people back into the workforce.
Amen to that, brother. I totally agree. Thank you so much, Dan, and we'll talk again next week.
Always a pleasure. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too.